Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
May Allah protect this homeland and may peace be on you.
Well, apparently they have graphics and special effects in Egypt as well.
The Egyptian president, Hosni Mubarak, saying pretty much what we expected him to say.
Hosni is saying goodbye. Hosni Mubarak, the president of Egypt.
I think it's going to be very disappointing to the people out on the streets.
The Egyptian president who can read the writing or hieroglyphics or whatever you want to call it on the wall.
Is that going to be enough to placate the people?
The coup de grace, his speech there had to be... His statement, I intended to do this all along.
Basically saying, well, I wasn't going to stand anyway.
Will those who have mobbed the streets of Egypt tolerate his desire to maintain his presidency through the next presidential election?
We are on top of it.
There you heard the sad state of the American news commentators. The biggest jerk of the day being Neil Cavuto of Fox News, referring to the... President of Egypt in such terms as Hosni, joking about reading the hieroglyphics on the wall, something you'd expect from somebody in high school or junior high school. The question is, what happens next? Will the Islamists take over is the fear that many people have, and it's a rational fear in that it happened in Iran. The question is Egypt Iran? The answer is no, Egypt is not Iran. And what went on in Iran before is not what is going on in Egypt now. However, that doesn't mean that the political desert that you fear will not become even more arid. And you must also remember that although Mubarak had a minor dictatorship, it was not the kind of dictatorship that you see now in Iran or in Syria. And so, therefore, it's actually quite difficult to predict what is going to happen because Mubarak tolerated some dissent in order to please Western allies, that is true, while there is no dissent tolerated in Iran, and yet you hear nothing about Iran from the vermin in the media. Now, the question is, who's going to take over Egypt when Mubarak goes? Whether he goes sooner than September is another story, and of course, nobody can predict. Everyone fears the Muslim Brotherhood, but you have to understand that there's more than one Muslim Brotherhood. The Muslim Brotherhood, according to an expert I read, Amir Tahari, the Muslim Brotherhood is divided into its own factions that he says hate each other more than they hate their common enemies. And I don't know enough about this to discuss it with any intelligence, and so I won't do it. The main thrust of Mr. Amir Tahiri's article on who'll build Egypt's future in today's New York Post is that he doesn't know, is that there are many factions, and the factions are diverse, and that they're all fighting with each other, and they all may join together. But he says there is a coalition emerging, a democratic coalition that could, in some ways, take over the country. But we don't know, he says. Once the lid of despotism lifts, the world will discover a vivacious Egyptian society full of surprises, both bad and good, which is, again, hedging his bet because he doesn't know what's going to happen any more than I do. Now, before we go on, I'd like to say this. Egypt, I hate to say this because it makes it sound as though I didn't know this all along, but let me start at the top. It's very easy for an American to talk about Egypt as though we know something about Egypt when most of us know nothing about Egypt. Being a very ancient nation, it's very hard to understand the first thing about Egypt unless you study even, let us say, for 10 or 15 minutes something about the history of ancient Egypt, ancient Babylon, and ancient Assyria. And unless you know about the ancient history of Egypt, it's hard to know the current affairs of Egypt, as is true for many other nations on earth that are ancient. You should know. Let's start with a period of time and go from there. Egypt was conquered over many periods of time, as I said to you before on this show, that I feel America is somehow being conquered under Barack Hussein Obama. We have a sense with the Chinese president coming here and laughing at us, mocking our currency, and our president fundamentally genuflecting towards him that we have, in fact, been conquered. And we have a supine military, almost no leadership whatsoever in Congress. We feel as though we have been conquered. Ancient Egypt, of course, had been conquered many times. And let's begin in 670 BC. That's almost seven centuries before Christ appeared on the planet. Seven centuries before Christ, the Assyrians had conquered Egypt. And then if you looked for 10 centuries after that, you would see Egypt expanding and contracting in size like a microorganism under a microscope. In other words, the nation-state of Egypt, as we know it today, has not been fixed on a map any more than, let us say, Europe has been fixed on the map for a very long period of time, to make a modern analogy. But if you look at the history of Egypt during a long period of time, it expands, it contracts, various states arise and disappear. There are Semitic states of the Babylonians, the Assyrians, the Hittites, and the Syrians coming and going, conquering each other and disgorging each other again. And before I move on from this point of view, and then we'll get into current events, I should make a side note. Do you know who the Hittites were? H-I-T-T-I-T-E-S. The Hittites were the precursors of the Armenians. And you should know something about that, but we won't go into that. To the west of Asia Minor, where is Asia Minor? Have you heard of Asia Minor? Do you know where Mesopotamia is? Well, we heard of Mesopotamia while we were at war with Iraq, but that's ancient history now. What happened, by the way, when the Aryans entered Egypt? Because they did enter Egypt. The Aryans rudely entered Egypt at a certain time. What happened then? Well, it's another story of history of immigration, conquest, etc. And then you have to look at that and you have to say, come on, Mike, it's enough already with the ancient history. Who cares about what happened when the Assyrians or the Babylonians or various other Semitic or Christians conquered Egypt? We don't care about that. All we care about is the price of gasoline at the pump. And so therefore, I ask the question that I asked yesterday on the Savage Nation. Do you actually think that all wars are fought for honor? You don't actually believe that wars and revolutions are really all about money? This revolution going on in the Muslim world now is really only about money. Think about what I just said to you. They want the price of bread to come down. They want the jobs to be made available. And so therefore, it's always about money. You have it couched in many different ways, but it's always about the underdog wanting to take something away from the overdog, whether it's in Egypt then or in America today. It's going to happen here as well as it's been happening here because of the demagoguery of the Democrat Party. There's no question in my mind they would like to see a similar uprising here in America. In fact, the governor of the state of California shockingly said that we cannot talk about not extending the tax raises in California when you look at the, quote, young people and their aspirations in the streets of Egypt, if you can believe this. But then that's what you get. That's what you get from a lifetime of moonbeamism, if not from drinking Jim Beam. But if you are a moonbeam, and you've just been made governor after 50 years or 40 years, and you come back, and you've been stuck in the 1960s all of your life, you come back and you say, wow, look at what's going on in Egypt. We need more tax increases in California, because otherwise the young people in California are liable to do the very same thing. I guess that's what happens either from drinking too much Jim Beam or being a moonbeam. But the question is, what's going to happen in Egypt next? The answer is nobody knows, so therefore let's go on to another topic. Or shall we talk about Egypt for a little bit more? Let's play for you while you're calling 1-800-449-8255 a bit of Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak's announcement that he won't run in the upcoming presidential election. Fire Beowulf.
These demonstrations turned from an indication of civilized behavior in which freedom of expression is practiced to unfortunate confrontations inspired by political powers that wished to pour fuel on fire and to tamper with our homeland and its stability. The most
Stop right here. I want to say something about his speech. I listened to Mubarak's entire speech, and I have to say the average Egyptian must be far more intelligent than the average American. I would say that both our educational system and our wide dissemination of the pornography that comes out of Hollywood, whether it be a movie that's X-rated or not X-rated, the rap music, the lack of education. I would say the least educated Egyptian is far more intellectually advanced than the least educated American, who seems to be at the lowest level of the dolt scale. Because Mubarak's speech had texture, it had depth, it had various tenses in it. Now, compare that to the kind of speech that we are used to from our so-called politicians in this country. But that again, is a side note. The real question is, who has been pouring fuel on the fire to bring down Mubarak? Who has been pouring fuel on the fire who wants all the moderate Muslim leaders to fall? Now, you may say, you'll jump to conclusions right away and say, oh, that's clear, it's Iran. It's the Muslim Brotherhood. That's one possibility. That is certainly a possibility. But there's another distinct possibility, and that is, I'm going to quote now Henry Kissinger, who, as you well know, I distrust with virtually every strand of my DNA. I believe Henry Kissinger is perhaps the most devious man on the history on the planet today. That's my own personal feeling. I've been watching him since Rockefeller's days. I recently saw the tapes released about what he said about Jews in the Soviet Union. Even though he himself was a survivor of the Holocaust, he could care less about the plight of the Jews in Russia. Just shows you who this man is. He's sort of like in my opinion, sort of a cousin to the Soros mentality. But let's put my own personal likes and dislikes aside. Kissinger said just the other day, he said, you're seeing the first scene of the first act of a very long play. He means the fall of Egypt. So does that mean he knows something we don't know? Or is he just observing what is going on? I haven't any idea what he knows that I don't know. I'm not privy to that information. I am not a member of the Bilderberg Society. I am not a member of the Bohemian Club. I am not a lobbyist for China. I am not a lobbyist for China. I am not a member of the Bilderberg Club. I don't run naked in the woods of Sonoma with the members of the Bohemian Club, so I don't know the answer. I'll be right back.
Savage.
We are this day talking about only one thing, which is what follows in Egypt. And the answer is we don't know. I mean, the simpleton answer is that the big winner will be the Muslim Brotherhood and radical Muslim factions. It may be the right answer, because being the most vicious and the most organized, they will probably fill the power vacuum, and Iran will be the big winner. In fact, Iran could be behind all of this. Or, as I suggested yesterday, there may be other elements at play, including straight-out commercial interests, such as those who bet long on oil and love the price of oil going up and would like to even see oil go higher. And so, therefore, you say they could never have done this. They would never bring down an entire nation just simply for profit. And I say, look what they just did to this country 2 years ago for profit. So don't tell me they wouldn't bring down a nation. World War I was fought over commerce. So don't tell me that they wouldn't bring down a nation. You have no idea the motivation of greed. You have no idea the power of those who control a currency and that control the investments of a currency and bet against the currency and bet against the nation. You have no idea what a person is like who has no nation. 1-800-449-8255 is the Michael Savage Show. Let's go to the callers in Boca Raton. The rat's mouth. Joe, welcome to the Savage Nation.
On this one, I believe that the Muslim Brotherhood is pretty much the same as the Tea Party. And
so the Tea Party wants to put women in burqas?
No, the Tea Party wants to stand against big government, and same with the Muslim Brotherhood against the Israelites who have...
Wait, Joe, please. You made quite a statement that the Muslim Brotherhood is equal to the Tea Party. You're not serious, are you?
Oh, I'm absolutely serious.
So, in other words, the Tea Party movement in America wants to introduce Tea Party law in America, where everyone will be forced to drink 6 cups a day while praying for Arthur Godfrey?
No, it's about freedom, and the Muslim Brotherhood has been suppressed by the government, and they're trying to overthrow the government so they can at least...
So, in your mind, the Muslim Brotherhood is a benign, kindly faction?
I wouldn't say that, but I'd say that...
Well, what would you say, since you're an ignoramus to begin with, to make a statement of the kind you made to enter this national talk show? Who is the Muslim Brotherhood? What have they done, and what do they stand for?
They stand for their beliefs and their religion.
Well, what is their beliefs? I asked you. You're talking about it as though you know something. Who is the Muslim Brotherhood? What do they believe in?
They believe that they need to have the right in order to, they want to be in the government too. I don't know what kind of education you come from, but my professor is a lot more smarter than you, and he's...
I would say that you're perhaps the stupidest caller I've ever had in my 16 years on radio. You actually win a prize. Is there some way I can send you some fish oils to try and push your thinking power up to that of, let's say, a moron?
Excuse me, I'm in school right now, and I don't have a degree yet, but I am...
No, I can tell that. I don't know what school you might be in. What is it, Tallahassee Prison for Women? The college courses? You have no idea what you're talking about. You're so over your head, it's an embarrassment, but you wouldn't even understand what you're talking about. The Muslim Brotherhood stands for the introduction of Sharia law. Do you know what Sharia law is?
From what you say, from what you teach, it sounds like it's the devil's worship.
Uh-huh. So you would like Sharia law. Would you like to wear a burqa?
That's not my religion, but I would like to have the freedom to...
Well, wait a minute. Lady, you said that the Muslim Brotherhood is simply an oppressed faction, a political faction that simply wants its day in the sun. You don't even know who the Muslim Brotherhood is. They stand for Sharia law. They want Sharia law spread throughout the world, which would include you, Joe. Do you understand what that means?
Well,
okay, okay, take a walk. Please, Joe, do me a favor. Never call the show again. In fact, don't even listen to my show, because listeners like you lower the IQ by a vast amount. I know that when a person like you listens, the IQ goes down for every listener to the show. Sacramento, William, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Michael, I got 2 points to cover very fast. First of all, I'm glad you pointed out what Brown said. I cannot believe this arrogant Brown have set up the system to make a threat toward us that if we turn down in June...
Now, we're talking about Governor Jerry Moonbeam Brown, the new governor, old governor, the new old governor, who said that unless we extend the tax raises, we're going to have riots in the streets. Isn't that what he said? It's an old 60s rubric that was used to bully people into doing what the leftists wanted. He's doing it again.
Savage.
The most frightening thing is the fear that have been shaking the majority of Egyptians, and the fear, the worry that they have about tomorrow, about what tomorrow
All right,
may
this
bring.
This is part of Hosni Mubarak's, fundamentally his resignation speech. Egypt's in chaos. The price of food is rising, as we, of course, could predict very easily. All of the fools in the media were saying, "Ooh, they just want more employment and lower prices for food." Since when has chaos resulted in lower prices for anything? Joining us right now to give us his take on all of this is my friend and yours, Donald Trump, on the Savage Nation. Where is Mr. Trump? He's on line 10. Donald, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hello, Michael.
Well, what a world we're living in. It's a little different than even the 4 weeks ago when we were enjoying a party outdoors in Palm Beach. What is your reaction, Mr. Trump, to Mubarak saying he will step down?
Well, I think it's probably something that's inevitable. He had to do it. He had no choice. And frankly, I don't even know if that's going to be satisfying the folks out on the streets. But he had no choice.
I'm surprised that they didn't behead him. You know, if they could get their hands on him, it looks like they tear him apart. Which leads us to the next question. Who do you think is going to profit from the chaos in Egypt?
Well, it's sort of interesting. You look at the countries that are somewhat friendly. Of course, when you say friendly, they've taken advantage. We've paid $68 billion to Egypt over a period of years. $68 billion. We've paid a lot of money to Tunisia, and these were two nations that were in our camp, and they're the ones that are going bad. You don't see Iran going bad. You don't see others going bad. You see Tunisia and Egypt. So we have the nations that this country is sort of watching over, and the ones that are sort of semi-friendly to us, even though all we're doing is basically bribing them to stay friendly with us. And they're losing control. We're losing control of those nations. So it doesn't say much about the current administration when all of our allies are going to probably end up going against us, because the person, and in this case I think we can obviously say the man that is most hostile to the United States will probably end up being the leader of Egypt.
And who would that be?
Well, I guess they have a couple of choices, but there are a couple of pretty nasty characters out there that are very much opposed.
Well, do you think Iran has anything to do with all of this turmoil in the Middle East? I mean, Iran is the enemy of freedom around the world. Ahmadinejad has clearly said he wants to wipe Israel off the map. Ahmadinejad has oppressed the Iranian people. When there was a democracy movement in Iran a few years ago, this government did nothing to help them. And yet the American media and this government seems to have been colluding behind the scenes to overthrow Mubarak. This is very worrisome because with the rising of a radical Muslim ideology throughout the Middle East, nobody in America is going to benefit. Don't you agree with that?
Yes, I do. And I do agree that Iran probably has a lot to do with what happened. You know, they like the Suez Canal very much, but they like oil even more. And it's only a question of time. The minute we leave Iraq, they're going to take over those oil wells. And we're going to be sitting there like a bunch of dummies saying, boy, we just spent 10 years and over $1 trillion, $1.2 trillion as of this moment. And all we did is weaken Iraq to the point where Iran is going to walk in, take over the oil wells. If anyone's going to take over the oil wells, it should be the United States before we leave.
Well, I said that. I wouldn't have minded if it was a war for oil. I said it all along. Bush lied to us when he said that we would have reparations for the great expense of our men and our finances in the form of oil. We've not received one barrel of oil for free from Iraq. In fact, the minute they were liberated, they gave their contracts to your friends in China.
Yeah.
China got the contracts. The first contracts in Iraq for the oil, developing the oil, were given to China. You know that.
It's called lack of respect for this country and our leaders. It's unbelievable and unthinkable. And, you know, I don't know if you realize that Iraq has $15 trillion worth of oil under their ground. We should take out $1.5 trillion, which is what we spent on this war, in order to liberate Iraq, which is, by the way, going to go to Iran. There's no question about it in my mind. There's no question. You will look back in 2 years. Hopefully you'll remember it was me that predicted it, because I really said it 2 years ago. We have weakened Iraq to the point where they can't defend themselves against Iran. Iran, the minute we leave, they will walk in and they will take over Iraq. And what they really want is the oil.
Well, I have to tell you that 3 years ago, now we're getting again into a contest here, I published a book called Liberalism is a Mental Disorder, where I said this could be George Bush's greatest blunder, and the big winner will be an emerging Iran who will then restore its ancient borders, and we'll see an ancient Persia that moves fundamentally from Iran into Iraq, and Iraq and Iran will become one all over again, because the Iranians are fundamentally a Shiite nation, and the only counterbalance against them was the oppressive, horrendous dictator Saddam Hussein, who Bush executed along with his sons. And what happened was, into this vacuum stepped Iran. But Iran seems to be behind a lot of what's going on right now in Egypt. At least many of us believe that, especially when you analyze the Muslim Brotherhood. If you became president, Donald Trump, let's forget something we can't even predict. We can only say what we fear might happen or what we hope wouldn't happen. If you became president, if you should decide to run, would you change the U.S. tax system or would you alter the tax structure?
Well, I would alter and change. I'd do a combination of things, and I would create great incentives for people to go out and do a good job, and I would do one thing that would have to do with a different kind of a taxing structure. I would tax China for having cheated us so badly out of so many products and so many jobs. You know, if you look at China, what they're doing to this country is unbelievable. It's never happened before, except for OPEC, who has even been worse. I mean, OPEC is, nobody has done to us. You know, it's interesting. Even though Egypt has no oil, or very little oil, but basically no oil, I said, watch. There's a little bit of a riot, and it'll probably turn into a big riot, which it did in Egypt. OPEC will now raise the price of oil because they're going to blame Egypt. In other words, anytime there's any kind of event, OPEC gets together and raises the price of oil because stupid people sit back and they say, oh, gee, there's a riot in Egypt. The people are rioting. Oil went up. Let's not blame OPEC. And isn't it amazing? They raised the price of oil $10 a barrel today. That's unheard of. $10 in one day. And they get away with it because everyone says, oh, gee, there's a problem in Egypt. So,
no, but if Egypt falls into the hands of the Muslim Brotherhood and then Yemen falls into the hands of the Muslim Brotherhood and they then control both sides of the Suez Canal, there in fact could be a nightmare scenario, truthfully.
Nightmare, and we could also do something about it very easily. You know, we're the most powerful nation on earth, but we don't use our power correctly.
Well, oh boy, now you know why I'm for Donald Trump for president. We should have said we don't know which way it's going to go. We back Mubarak, but we're sending the 101st Airborne and a Naval Fleet to the northern portion of the Suez Canal and to the southern portion, and we're going to defend the Suez Canal because it's a vital blood vessel for the entire world. But this president has done nothing, Mr. Trump.
He's not respected. He's not a respected man. He's not a respected president. It's very, very sad to see what's happening. And again, Tunisia and Egypt are rioting. I mean, you don't see other nations rioting, although they could, and that might be okay, because frankly, if some of the others riot, maybe OPEC breaks up and we'll actually be able, because they'll be in such disarray, we'll be able to make a better deal, not a worse deal in oil. But it's amazing.
I know you were quoted the other day as saying oil could come down. I was surprised by that. I don't understand your thinking. How would oil come down with such chaos in the Middle East?
Well, I'll tell you one thing. If we used natural gas, for one thing, and yeah. if we use nuclear, which we should be using, France is powering its entire nation, and I'm not a big fan of France for a lot of different reasons.
No, I agree with you. I've been behind nuclear energy for 15 years.
They virtually don't need outside sources. And if we use nuclear, and if we use natural gas, you know, we're the Saudi Arabia of natural gas. And if we use the kind of things that we should be using, we wouldn't even need the oil from these countries that are building new airports for $38 billion and that make us just look like an obsolete, ancient country. So if we used our powers and used our brain, we could again be the greatest nation on earth, but what's happened to our country is we're not respected. Our leaders aren't respected. I have Chinese friends. I'm not blaming them. If you can get away with something,
yep.
you should. But they right. can't believe what they're getting away with the United States.
You were quoted, Mr. Trump, as saying some of your Chinese business friends have said to you they can't believe what they're getting away with, and frankly, they want to eat everything that they can of our society in the broad sweep. They're taking our technology. It started 20 years ago with them literally buying entire technological industries and moving them overseas. They don't let you do business there unless you share technology with them, which is unheard of. And that's how a nation falls apart, isn't it?
It's true, and we're falling apart. And when they say 5 years or 6 years, Ben Bernanke, 2 weeks ago, he said 5 to 6 years before our jobs come back, to which I say, why are they going to come back if China's making all our products? I mean, you know, you're not going to be able to come back. So we are really, it's incredible. And then we have a great state dinner for the Chinese president who's ripping us off. You know, when I have enemies, I don't have state dinners for the enemies. I let the enemies know they're my enemy. And here's a guy gets off the plane. And by the way, I don't even know if you saw that fiasco. They couldn't even put the carpet down for him properly, right? It took them 10 minutes to put the carpet down.
Maybe the unions wanted more money to roll it out correctly.
That's an interesting statement. But I will say that you don't give state dinners to people that are ripping you off.
This is an interesting question, and it's one that I think needs to be asked, which is, well, let me just change it to New York State. You have a governor, Cuomo, who's a Democrat and a liberal, who actually is acting more fiscally conservative than most of the conservatives in the government of running the United States of America on a federal level. He said today, we cannot afford to continue running these kind of deficits, and he wants to cut back on health. He wants people to cut back on pensions, things like that. Do you think he's going to be successful? I mean, you obviously would agree with him, correct?
Well, I agree, and it's not like agreeing. You have no choice. We have tremendous deficits in New York. You can't raise taxes because everyone's just going to leave. So it's not like he has a choice, but so far he's sending out lots of good signals.
Yeah, but here in California, we have a governor, Jerry Brown, who says we need more tax hikes or we're going to have Egyptian-style unrest here. Doesn't he realize that the earners are going to leave this state if he keeps it up? We're all going to move to Florida and we're all going to try to join Mar-a-Lago?
That's right. They'll all come down to Florida and they'll be members of my Mar-a-Lago club. But I have clubs in California, too. I have a great golf course in California, phenomenal, in Rancho Palos Verdes. And I will tell you, people are angry in California at the taxes and the tax struggle. They have a struggle in California, and I was surprised. I know Jerry Brown very well, and I was very surprised. He's actually talking about raising taxes, and I don't
A shocker, because he's posed himself as a moderate. Do you know the upper income in this state pays about 10.5% state tax on top of the federal tax?
Unbelievable.
10.5% state tax in the state. Florida, zero.
That's right. A lot of people moving down to Florida.
Yeah, I understand why. Now, let's go into some of the other entitlements, Mr. Trump. You know, say entitlements. The word itself puts my flesh on edge because as far as I'm concerned, the only entitlement we have on earth is death and taxes, as someone wiser than I said. Where is it written that Medicare can't require higher co-payments and that Social Security can't be cut by a few percent each year, or that federal employees can't have their pensions cut by 2% a year for the next 5 years? Why should federal workers have it better than the average American worker?
Well, the politicians don't like to get into Medicare. They don't like to get into Social Security. And I even noticed that the Republicans, who are very conservative, don't want to talk about Social Security and Medicare. And maybe you'll have to talk to them. It's a very complex subject. But, you know, I view it differently. I don't like playing around with Social Security and Medicare. You know, people need it. Now, I will say this. Someday soon, I'm going to get a Social Security check. I shouldn't be getting a Social Security check.
Wait a minute. Let me enjoy that laugh. Where are you going to do? Gamble in Atlantic City with it?
Security check. And people that make a lot of money, they don't even know. They won't even know they got it, okay?
Right.
And there are people that make so much money, they literally wouldn't even know that they got it. So at a certain point, maybe you should start looking at that. But I will say this.
But wait a minute. How about cutting the Social Security for people who aren't even citizens? And how about raising the retirement age by 2 years? They did that in France recently. There were riots, and then the riots were suppressed, and it was over. Why don't we just raise the retirement age by 2 years?
Michael, what the current politicians want to do is go back to raising for people that aren't born because they're afraid that maybe they'll lose a vote. But that's not that's not going to be the thing. The thing that we should be doing is taxing China, is taxing Mexico, who's taking a lot of jobs.
Right.
Taxing India, where we have everybody working in India in the credit card business. Everybody's working in India. You have a problem with your credit card, you're calling up somebody in India to straighten it out. We should be for outsourcing. If somebody wants to outsource to India, I think that's great. Let them pay a tax, a big fat tax, and then you'd be able to lower taxes. Because, you know, you say what you want about taxes in this country. We pay the highest taxes in the world. And
is that
the reason
true?
Is that every country, so many countries, in particular China, is eating our lunch.
I agree with you. We're going to ask the callers. Maybe one will have the luck to get on with Donald Trump here on the Savage Nation. The minute we come back from our commercial break, one question for Donald Trump, whether it be on Egypt or domestic policies. Also, during the break, while listening to the commercial messages, you can go on to shouldtrumprun.com. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Speaking with one of America's most well-known businessmen, he's also a very famous media personality, Donald Trump, and I believe he should run for the presidency for a couple of reasons. You say, well, why? Number one, he's a businessman, and in my book, Trickle Up Poverty, I conclude by saying run the country like a business, not an empire. Number two, he has an immense capacity for paying attention to detail, as I know from the buffet table at his club, and I'm not joking about that. You can judge everything by a buffet table. Right now, we're going to ask Donald Trump a most important question. Mr. Trump, Al Gore has been quoted today as saying the blizzards that are hitting America are caused by global warming. What do you have to say to Al Gore?
I am so tired of this global warming nonsense. It is so ridiculous. And I don't know if you know what we're doing. We're retooling our factories so that we can't compete against China and others. In order to protect against global warming, which doesn't exist, we have the coldest winter in New York that I can ever remember. I've been around a long time, and I have never seen snow after snow, storm after storm. People can't leave their buildings, and I'm hearing about global warming. And then these global warming guys, they always have an answer. They say, oh, no, the extremely cold weather is another sign of global warming.
Right. That's stupid. They say that the havoc that's being created as a result of hotter, dry spells caused by their science, which is all based on fraud. No, it's crazy, but there's a very serious policy. There are very serious policy mistakes being made based on this fraudulent science. Look at the contracts being given over to so-called green energy. A study was done in Scotland. It showed that each kilowatt of energy driven by windmills costs far more than that driven by hydroelectric or even that by coal-fired plants.
Right. That's right. Well, What's going on is absolutely insane. And I always ask the question, as you have these factory owners that are going out of business, you know, trying to gear up for global warming so that we don't warm up the planet, I say, do you think really that China is gearing up their factories? Have you ever been to China and seen their factories? They are spewing coal and spewing garbage. And I'm not saying that's the right thing, but I will tell you, they're not believers in global warming other than with their mouths. They talk about global warming. And this country, what we're doing to our factories, I mean, we're making it impossible for these people to produce goods and services at a fair price. So when I
tariffs on China, we both agree on tariffs on China and getting some leadership in the military to use our military, to charge for the use of our military, as you've said with South Korea, for example. I believe we should have sent our military both to the to both sides of the Suez Canal and protect the Suez Canal from any takeover. But thus far, not one word from anyone in the government with regard to using our military properly. Donald Trump, when are you going to decide? After The Apprentice is over?
I'm going to decide, yeah, sometime in June, during the month of June.
Well, let's hope that you do run, because America does need a very serious businessman to run the country, not a career politician. I'd recommend people go to the independent website, shouldtrumprun.com, and, you know, see what's on there. Any final words here for the audience on the Savage Nation?
Well, I just say this, Michael. We're not a respected country anymore. That's why it's Egypt and Tunisia that's rioting, not other countries that we don't control. They don't respect us. They don't like us, but I think it's even beyond like anymore. They don't respect us, a much more important word. And if I do decide to run, I can guarantee you one thing, we'll be respected again as a country.
You remember what Teddy Roosevelt said, walk softly and carry a big stick? I think with Obama, we have a guy who walks softly and carries no stick.
Thank you very much, Michael.
Thanks, Donald Trump. A pleasure to have you on the Savage Nation. When I return, your calls and more, all the news, what's going on in Egypt and the Middle East. There's a new story out saying Iran is saying this is the beginning of an Islamic empire across the Middle East.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Over the past few days, the American people have watched the situation unfolding in Egypt. We've seen enormous demonstrations by the Egyptian people. We've borne witness to the beginning of a new chapter in the history of a great country and a longtime partner of the United States. And my administration's been in close contact with our Egyptian counterparts and a broad range of the Egyptian people, as well as others across the region.
Broad range, meaning Muslim Brotherhood. He's been found out.
Period. We've stood for a set of core principles. First, we oppose violence. And I want to
commend... Go tell that to your friends in the gutters there.
...for the professionalism and patriotism.
All right, let's not... I can't listen to it anymore. Just bashing Obama is already a redundancy. Welcome to the Savage Nation. Our leader has given a speech that is, of course, lacking leadership. But the question is... They want Mubarak removed today. The mobs are not happy. The Muslim Brotherhood wants him out so they can do to Egypt what they did to Iran. You may say that's simplistic and it won't happen. Well, how do you know it won't happen? And as someone said, the devil you know is better than the devil you don't know. You want to put it another way, Before the Devil Knows You Dead is a heck of a movie. I highly recommend it. But Hosni Mubarak, if he is a devil at all, is the devil that we've been working with. And he's a rather moderate devil compared to the Hitler of Iran, who is anything but moderate. Hosni Mubarak has moderated the extremist Islamists in the Middle East. He's helped keep peace with Israel for a very long period of time. How much longer he can hold on, we don't know. But watch out what you wish for, all you liberal fools who think that tomorrow they're going to be dancing in the streets and the price of bread will come down. Remember when the Bush administration foolishly demanded democratic elections in Gaza and the radicals in Hamas won? Or do you remember when Jimmy Carter, the fool, overthrew the Shah of Iran by undermining him and the Shah fled? Do you remember the Ayatollahs took over and Iran has fallen into a dark state ever since? Remember, the original Iranian revolution was originally backed by many different groups, just as what is going on in Egypt today. But it was the violent extremists who took over the movement in Iran, and they are the ones who are likely to take over in Egypt. The Muslim Brotherhood is very likely to take over, even though there are many opposition groups, and the reason is because they're highly organized, highly motivated, and they are the most violent. So, ladies and gentlemen, although you think that this is like the civil rights movement, and there's legitimate grievances, and so forth and so on, be very, very careful what you wish for, as they say, because the fact of the matter is it's going to get a lot worse before it gets better. The nation is very poor in Egypt. And tell me who you think they're going to blame tomorrow. They haven't blamed us yet, but tomorrow they're going to blame the United States and Israel, as sure as I'm sitting here. The demagogues in Egypt are no different than the demagogues in America, although they speak more bluntly, and they will find the fall guy. The fall guy will be the Jew and the American, as sure as I'm standing here. Incidentally, it's already happening. And here's a question that no one in the media has raised other than Michael Savage, and I raised it yesterday, I believe for the first time. Have you fools noticed that almost all the protest signs that are being recorded coming out of Egypt are in large block English letters? Have you fools seen what I see, which is that every time there's a CNN or a Fox camera, or an ABC or a CBS or an NBC camera, they're focusing on a a protest sign, so to speak, in English, in the streets of Cairo. How is that possible? It's the same situation as when the Intifada was stirred up in Israel. Whenever the Arab youth were rioting in the streets, they seemed to have signs ready to go, printed in large block English letters for the cameras. And so therefore, if you think this is happening spontaneously, you're an absolute, you're very naive, let's put it to you that way. This is not a spontaneous revolution. This is long orchestrated, and I believe the U.S. government has its hands all over it. And that leads us to the next question. Why would the United States government want moderate Arab regimes to fall? It's very worrisome if they, in fact, have been colluding in the downfall of Mubarak, because either they're gambling that a less despotic individual will arise, which is a very big gamble, or something even more nefarious in the land of Nefertiti is on the horizon, and that is that they're actually in cahoots with the radical Muslims around the world, which is probably almost impossible to comprehend that Obama is. But many people on the right wing fear this. They have feared it not just because he is a Muslim, but because his inclinations seem to be in that direction. Now, the U.S. can do an awful lot if they wanted to. The fact of the matter is, we could have said, we're in the favor of democracy. We'll back whoever comes to power, so long as they're not extremists. But in the interim, to protect stability in the world and to protect the oil prices around the world, we're sending the 7th Fleet from where it is, to the southern tip of the Suez Canal, and we're going to send another one of our fleets out of the Mediterranean to the north of the Suez Canal, and we're going to send in men from the 101st or the 82nd Airborne and put them on both points of the Suez Canal to make sure that traffic continues to flow, that the maritime traffic is not blocked. How come we haven't done that? The answer is because we don't have Ronald Reagan in office. The answer is because we don't even have Jimmy Carter in office. Whereas I said to Donald Trump in the last hour, Teddy Roosevelt famously said, walk softly and carry a big stick. We have a president who doesn't always talk softly, but he carries no stick. He refuses to use the most powerful military on earth, who engages virtually day and night in training missions. So I'll go to your calls right now on the Savage Nation, 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com, and we'll take the calls and the temperature of the United States of America. Let's go to Kansas City, the middle of America. Jeff, You're first up in this hour. Go ahead, please.
Actually, my question was going back related to what you, the comment you made about Henry Kissinger, with Egypt being the first act of a long play being played out. And yep. Of course, I disagree with what our president's doing. I heard the State of the Union speech, and it just seems to me like he's a man who is put in power by people behind him, who is dismantling our nation from within with his policies and the things he wants.
Well, you're not alone in those feelings. You're not alone at all. So what is the point about Egypt, though?
Well, you said that Henry Kissinger was making a reference that a reorganization or the one-act play was the whole play was the evolution.
No, Kissinger said this is the first act, the first scene of the first act of a very long play. And so therefore, does he know something we don't know, and what is it that he knows? Why would the leaders of the financial markets, if one wants to put it in those terms, why would they want moderate Arab regimes to fall, is the question I've been raising.
Greed.
I don't have the answer other than if that is true, it's because they're speculating on a rise in prices of oil and other commodities that will go up in price. Maybe they went long on wheat, and they know that we're going to have to export wheat. Maybe they got caught short with some short bets on some other commodities. You think it couldn't happen? You think that these people don't have the power to influence policy around the world? You think that they wouldn't destroy individual lives and entire nations for another penny of profit? Then you know nothing about history. Okay? New York, Sonia, you're on the Savage Nation.
Please comment or explain to me how the people rioting, they look so well-dressed and so healthy. It doesn't make sense to me.
And have you noticed the protest signs are in English?
Yes, I don't understand.
Who printed them? Where were they printed? Somewhere in Chicago or New York and air freighted out overnight with the planes coming back and forth, taking the foreigners out? Some groups are behind this. They're orchestrating the downfall of Mubarak, and they're going to fill the power vacuum, no doubt, with their own people. Maybe they will not be the Muslim Brotherhood. Maybe they will be. But we know that Mubarak has been our friend for 30 years, and he's been a force of stability. And that's what's worrisome, is we don't know what's coming.
Yes.
Thank you for the call. Yes, they look quite healthy. New York, Mahar, welcome to the Savage Nation. Welcome to the program.
Dr. Savage, thank you for the education you have given me for the past few years. Today I'm calling you to give you behind-the-scenes events and facts that are playing in the situation in Egypt. What is taking place in the past couple of days specifically, these people that are rioting, these are not the people that wanted freedom and they wanted the change. These are the people that are followers of the radicals, and these are the ones that are being financed by four major players in the region. We all know who they are. That's why the signs are written in English. That's why the signs are well written, and they are specifically targeting...
Maher, have you noticed I'm the only one in the media who has noted that the signs are in English and the cameras are always on these English signs in Cairo? How is that possible?
Because everybody is intelligent.
Maher, please call me back. I'll be right back. You're breaking up on the Savage Nation.
Israel is our enemy. We don't like him. And he's the fairest eye for them here. Israel and America supported him. We hate them all. We don't like them. Go to hell, Mubarak. We don't like you.
We are not listening to the pet cage at Richard Gere's house. We are listening to the street scenes in Egypt where I have noticed I'm the only, maybe the first in the American media, I won't be the last, that almost all the street signs are printed in English. Large block capitals in English. Everyone looks well-dressed. No one looks like they're starving. They look like they all just came back from a nice lamb dinner. This whole thing seems to be orchestrated by outside forces, including the United States of America, who has some kind of vested interest in toppling moderate Arab regimes. Remember that Hosni Mubarak is a moderate Muslim. He's a moderating influence. And losing him is losing an awfully great friend in the Middle East. The fact of the matter is, unless you know your history, you're condemned to repeat it. And because of the educational system in America, truthfully, the lack of an educational system in America, we don't even understand that this has happened before. This is history repeating itself. This happened under the last leftist, the last weak leftist president this country had, who was Jimmy Carter. A weak leftist president, again, stuck with his head in the sky, undermined the Shah of Iran, talked about human rights, legitimate grievances, blah, blah, blah. And as a result, the scourge of radical Islam has spread around the world, all because of Jimmy Carter. It's happening again in Egypt. There is not a direct parallel, but it's a close enough parallel for you to be worried, very worried indeed. I think we've covered it. The question is, how is this going to affect you in Pittsburgh or New York or Florida or San Francisco or wherever you are? Does this really affect you directly in any way? It does. In addition to the obvious such effects such as oil prices, it affects you in a more profound way because here in California we have a governor who has already taken his 1960s baseball cap and put it back on, and he said, unless we continue to raise taxes in California, the highest tax state in the land, by the way, unless we continue to raise taxes in the state of California, said Governor Jerry Brown, the legitimate grievances of the young people in Egypt are liable to be seen here in California. I heard this crap in the 60s when the radicals would go to college campuses and say, unless we get our way, we don't know what might happen on this campus. It's the same exact rubbish that was used by the radicals in the 60s being used here in America. Already one demagogue is using it, and that's Jerry Brown. God knows who will use it tomorrow in the Democrat Party, saying, unless we do this for the illegal alien, they're liable to riot. Unless we give them the DREAM Act, they're liable to riot. Unless we give them citizenship, they're liable to riot. You name it, they're going to use it as sure as I'm sitting here, because they know the Alinsky playbook. They know the Rahm Emanuel playbook, which is never let a crisis go to waste. And if you think that the White House is not going to use this crisis that they might possibly be involved with, and there's good evidence that they met with some of the radicals over the last few months or weeks, they scurried them into Washington for some State Department meetings and then smuggled them back into Egypt. If you think they're not involved at some level of the government, I disagree with you. The question is, and I can't answer it, why would Barack Obama wish to see Mubarak fall? Why would he want moderate Arab regimes to fall? Now, you could rush to conclusions and say, because he's a Trojan horse for the radical elements. I don't believe that's true. Personally, I don't believe that's true. But it's very worrisome that he hasn't made a stronger case for moderating Muslim influences in the Middle East. That's very worrisome, by the way. Let's take your callers on the Savage Nation. Pittsburgh. No, let's go to Russell in Tucson. He's been waiting a long time. Russell, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Michael. Boy, this is awesome talking to you. That Donald Trump, man, he gets me going.
Yeah, he's a great guy. Great guy. So what's on your mind?
I just think this Muslim Brotherhood is a bunch of jealous third world idiots. You know,
To just say jealous third world idiots isn't going to get us anywhere. They're anything but idiots. They're very serious people. Jealous doesn't apply to them. They're very intent on dominating the Middle East. They're very intent on introducing Sharia law. They're very intent on overthrowing any democracy that does not have a religious basis. And so, therefore, they're anything but idiots. I have to disagree with you on that, Russell. The phone number here, you know already, the website, you know, protesters now want Mubarak out immediately. He gave an address saying he will not run for re-election when his term has expired in this fall. But the fact of the matter is, the protesters who are massed in the streets want him out sooner, and their protest signs all seem to be in English. How is that possible? If there's no conspiracy of forces outside of Egypt, will any, let us say, liberal listening to the show explain to me why their protest signs are in English and that the CNN cameras just happen to be there when the protest signs in big block capitals in English are held up for their cameras? It seems to me that a lot of this is orchestrated. It is not spontaneous, and I don't believe it's just simply youth who are disaffected. And also, the price of bread has already gone up. It's going to go up even higher. The price of basic necessities are going to go through the roof, all because of you good liberals who saw this as a civil rights march akin to Selma, Alabama.
Savage.
nobody likes chaos in the world. I mean, there are those who want chaos because they capitalize on it. And mainly in this country, you have a division between liberals who like chaos. They teach chaos. They want chaos in order to reform society. That's what Obama specializes in as a community organizer, which is chaos. They capitalize on chaos, and they then try to, quote, transform the society. What Obama has done to this society on a local level, on a national level, is a minor form of transformation. He was stopped yesterday, but he's not certainly stopped forever. But if you look at the history of empires of the past, whether it be the ancient Egyptian empire or any other Near Eastern empire, or in fact any other empire, what you find are people who are jealous in adjoining areas. They're jealous of civilizations that they see around them, and they're greedy for their riches. That's exactly what we see inside America itself. We have millions upon millions of illegal aliens who are jealous of this society and greedy for the riches of this society. And yet we have a corrupt government in cahoots with very powerful business interests who continue to cater to this enemy within, because in fact, when you have millions of people who are disenfranchised in that manner, you know that eventually they're going to erupt. And then you have demagogic politicians who are going to exploit this as far as they can without calling for an outright riot here and there, although they do it once in a while. And then eventually it explodes. So, yeah, there are direct parallels to what's going on in Egypt in many ways. And it's under the surface in this country. But most of us who are conservative do not like instability. We do not like chaos. We like order. And we would like to see this order that we see in America continue. It will not continue. It has not continued. In fact, there's probably been more rapid social changes under Obama in 2 years than there have been in the previous 20 here in the United States of America. And that's why it was a very good thing yesterday when the second federal judge slapped him down on Obamacare, which was clearly a power grab, autocratic, and unconstitutional. Now, let's go back to Mesopotamia. Let's go back to Egypt. Let's look at the Sinai. Well, that sounds too much like a high school class that I fell asleep in, so I won't do that. I mean, I always fell asleep during history. I couldn't stand it. It made no sense to me. I wasn't interested in it. And, of course, as I've gotten more mature, I've come to see how important it is to understand history, or else really without a context, you don't know what's going on. Moreover, when you see the children with the dungarees, with the blackberries in this country and around the world, who are as ignorant a generation as any has ever existed, perhaps even more so, perhaps the dumbest generation in history, all they do is sit and communicate with each other on cell phones about trivia. All they do is Twitter, twittering their time away. Do you think they really have a context of history? Do you think these people who Twitter their time away understand in the slightest what is going on both in this country and in Egypt? I know they don't. And so therefore, in this chaos, the leftist college professors tell them, oh, this is very much like our civil rights movement. It's simply the Egyptians wanting equality and democracy. And so the Twitterers buy that line because it's simple for them, and it permits them, without any intellectual energy, to go on to their next Twittering. And consequently, we have an entire generation of fools, and they have no leadership. The job of a leader, that is a president or a politician, is to explain to the population in as simple terms but as accurate terms as possible what is going on both domestically and internationally and put it in context for them. Do you actually think that Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama or John Boehner has explained what is going on in the proper context? Because I know they haven't. I don't think that Boehner himself knows what's going on. I think he is so over his head it's frightening. Hillary Clinton may know better, but I don't trust Hillary Clinton. Barack Obama probably knows what's going on, but I don't trust Barack Obama to tell us the truth. And so therefore, it falls upon the media, the few of us in the media who have some education, who have the capacity and the willingness to study history, and to put it in context, to act as the Paul Revere's for this society, and to tell you that what is happening in the Middle East is having direct effects on America. And it's only going to have even more effects in the very short, in the very near future. What is going on, we don't have any ability to control anymore. It's out of control. We certainly could put a stop to this hemorrhaging. We certainly could send the military to the Suez Canal to protect the flow of oil and other goods through the Suez Canal. But I would guess that if you asked 9 out of 10 American college students where the Suez Canal is, when it was built, how it was built, at what cost was it built, and why was it built, 9 out of 10 of them would not know the answer to that question. They would assume it's simply a natural schism in the waterways between the vast Mediterranean, which it is not. And so, therefore, what hope is there for this country? The hope is to continue doing my job, and you continue to do your job. You continue to educate yourself, and hopefully you explain to people on a daily basis exactly what is going on. So, for example, yesterday in San Francisco, I heard two, and they looked like reasonably educated white men in their 50s. I heard them discussing what was going on in Egypt, and one said to the other, I think rather intelligently, he said, well, there are some parallels with Iran, but they're not direct, and I wouldn't worry about it. That's the naive, urbane, liberal attitude, which is that, oh, yes, it's true that Jimmy Carter undermined the Shah of Iran, and unfortunately the Muslims, the radical Muslims, took over a moderate Muslim nation. But we shouldn't worry about it, they say, because it won't happen here. It can happen here. Let's put our head in the sand. Why won't it happen there? Why should it not happen in Egypt? Who is going to prevent it from happening? I don't see America trying to stop it from happening. Do you? Let's go to Jerry on line 10. Jerry, go ahead, please.
Hi, Dr. Savage. First, real quick, have you ever thought about doing an update on the political zoo and adding a few new characters?
Let's move on, Jerry. I can't get sidetracked with that right now. You have to excuse me. I want to stay focused on Egypt.
I see Jordan. I see the same thing happening into Jordan. And I would say the Saudi kings and princes are shaking in their robes right now. And the president, his friends are over there. I mean, they were organizing, Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn. They were teaching civil disobedience last year during the boat lifts over there. They were training people over there in grassroots community organizing.
Well, I'm not shocked by that. Why should we be shocked by that? They both should have been they should have been in jail for life. But look, the world has changed. We have a communist revolutionary running the United States of America. He doesn't identify as an American. He identifies as an international socialist. So all of this is happening because this is part of the transformationalism that he talks about, Chris. He doesn't talk about America's exceptionalism. He talks about his transformationalism. Do you understand all of that? You do. I know you do, Jerry. Thanks for the call. So that's why we're in trouble. I'm the only one who's noticed that most of the signs that we see coming out of the Middle East are in English. No one has been as acute a social observer as I in the media, but that's why I have. The fact of the matter is, my observations are worth waiting for because they're usually a little more unique than others, in addition to the great humor that we get going here once in a while. And I don't want to devolve into humor. I mean, there's a lot of humor that could be played out right now, and you could start making jokes about, you know, what will Mubarak do afterwards? Is he going to open a bar in Long Beach? You know, I don't want to go into that yet. I think he's a fine man. You know, you got to remember his background. If you care about it, he was a military man. You know, he was an Air Force pilot. That means a lot to me. And, you know, he said something in his speech today, Mubarak, that struck a chord with me. I wonder if we have that particular soundbite where he says he's a military man and it's not his habit to abandon his responsibilities. Here, clip 23. You got to listen to this fabulous piece of a speech.
I was never, ever interested in being a dictator. And they know the difficult circumstances under which I accepted this responsibility and what I presented to my homeland in war and in peace. And I am also a man from the military. And it is not my habit to abandon my responsibilities. The first responsibility now.
Okay, did you hear that? He's a man of the military, and it's not his habit to abandon his responsibilities. That's a phenomenal statement, and it's also a noble statement. It's something that we sorely lack in the American on the American national scene. 1-800-449-8255. New York, Giles, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, hi, Michael. I would like to comment concerning the sign that you can see in Egypt in the streets. I'm not going to remind you that Egypt in the late 40s turned from a British colony into an independent country. And a lot of people over there are speaking English. There is even a daily news, an Egypt daily news.
No, I understand, but why would the signs be in English rather than in the local language, whether it be Arabic or some other dialect that may be spoken in a particular region of a city? Why would they aim the signs for the American and Western media, the American media in particular?
As you know, in a revolution like we had also in Tunisia, the revolution takes part outside of the country, through the media. And that's very important. That's why, for example, in Egypt, beside the fact that the signs were in English, they also cut all international connection from Internet, for example. And if they do that, it's because they don't want to have the Egyptian people to have the support from outside of the country.
Well, where do you think, Giles, where do you think this is going to go next? Do you think Jordan's king will fall, God forbid?
I don't think that the king Abdallah will fall. I do think that we have a big danger with Egypt. I do think that there is a possibility that the Muslim Brotherhood could make a coup in Egypt. It's possible. There is a point that I would like to show you is that the army is very strong in Egypt. And I doubt that the army will side with the Islamic Brotherhood. I have this doubt. I don't know what you think about it, but I think that Mubarak is coming from the army. Sadat was coming from the army. And the army today is very, very strong. And I doubt that the army will side with the Brotherhood. My second point concerning that is when you look at the street, when you look at the demonstration on the street, you see also people, when you see 500,000 people in the streets of Cairo, we know that in Cairo, half of the population is making less than $2 a day. So there is poor people. There is definitely a social movement.
But wait, let's pause right there. Egypt has always been a poor country. Where is the wealth supposed to come from for these millions and 80 million people? So the country is very poor. It's impoverished. $2 a day for the laborer. Where is the money supposed to come from when they have virtually no industry other than tourism? What do they export? I don't know of anything. I mean, I hate to be ignorant, but so far as I know, Egypt's number one product is tourism, isn't it?
Tourism is very big in Egypt, but you have also, it's a very strong country. They have a very strong military. They have a very strong education system.
No, but I mean, where is their revenue supposed to come from? What are they manufacturing in Egypt that the world is buying? So far as I know, nothing.
Maybe some energy, maybe some gas, a little bit of oil, definitely. But my point is here.
Well, what I'm saying is that I don't care who takes over the country, where are additional jobs going to come from? Where is additional income going to come from? I don't see it. I think that it will be a perennially poor nation. In fact, I'll go a step further. It's going to be more impoverished after Mubarak than it has been during Mubarak. That's my whole point.
Michael, I am born in Tunisia. I'm a Jewish guy. I was born in Tunisia. My family moved from Jerusalem to Tunisia 2,000 years ago.
Right, and the Jewish people were driven out of Tunisia in 1947 or 48 when Israel was formed, and your property was seized by the Muslims. Very few people know what went on in northern Africa when Israel was formed, which is the Jewish people who have been there for centuries were driven out of the country and their property seized.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's the same in Egypt. In the late 40s, all the Jews have to leave Egypt. The problem is now next would be the Christian. It started already what we heard on the news, but that's the tip of the iceberg. It's the same.
Yes, on New Year's, a Christian Coptic church was bombed by who? By the radical Muslims. Nail bombs, ball bearings, blown up. God knows, 50, 40 people killed and hundreds wounded. Very little attention by the so-concerned American media, who is now concerned about the rights of the Twitterer crowd wearing dungarees in Cairo. Giles, are you currently an American citizen or an Israeli?
Yes. No, I have nothing to do with Israel. My family was thrown out of Tunisia in the 60s before the Six-Day War.
So you're an American?
grew up in France, and I moved to America about 25 years ago.
I see. So looking at it from the historic context and from a familial context, in a nutshell, in 1 minute or less, Giles, what's coming next?
I have no idea. I can tell you it's going. What's going next for sure. It's going to be a big problem for Israel. It's going to be a big problem for American influence in the region, because if we are losing to yesterday we lost Lebanon with the Hezbollah.
Yes.
We lost Gaza to the Hamas.
Yes.
We are going to lose. It's a possibility that we are going to lose Egypt to the Islamic Brotherhood. So I think that the Americans are losing. Are losing a lot of battles in the Middle East, and I think,
right, primarily because we have a weak leftist president who nobody seems to fear, who never stands up to any despot. He seems to bow down to them. I'll be right back on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Ninety percent of the Egyptian population are Muslim, most of which are Sunnis. In fact, that's the majority religion is Islam, of which the Sunnis are the largest sect. And so 90% of the population are Muslim, 8 to 10% are Christian, with the Coptic Orthodox Christian Church being the largest denomination. But other denominations represented include Armenian Apostolic, Greek and Syrian Orthodox, Catholics, and a variety of evangelical Protestant denominations. The Jewish community is almost non-existent in Egypt at this time. And so, although the Constitution provides for religious freedom, and the government has somewhat of a history of infringements upon this right, you will soon see that Mubarak has been the greatest friend of religious freedom in modern Egyptian history. The Sharia law, Islamic law, is prohibited in Egypt right now. That is because Mubarak is a moderate man. You're going to see what happens in very short order, at which point you'll come to understand that your naive view that this is a civil rights uprising is completely false. Article 98 of the Penal Code in Egypt allows for prosecution for unorthodox practices and beliefs that are considered to be insulting heavenly religions, whatever that means. And so there's government discrimination against Muslim fundamentalists and Christian fundamentalists, by the way. We don't have to go any further than this at this time. You should know, though, that what you see now in Egypt is a picnic compared to what's coming. Those of you who are starry-eyed idealists and think this is a civil rights movement will find out that you are mistaken. What is the currency in Egypt? The Egyptian pound is the currency. It's a paper currency of 100 piastres. What are the holidays? I don't think you need to know those. What are the ethnic groups in Egypt? That's a very interesting question. The ethnic groups that make up 99% of the population of Egypt are of Eastern Hamitic stock. These include Egyptians, Bedouins, and Berbers. And they are a product of the intermixture of ancient Egyptians with the invaders of many millennia from various parts of Asia and Africa. Remember I said to you on this show about a week ago, do you feel as though we've been invaded? You are being invaded. You have been invaded. The Department of Homeland Security is making sure that you're invaded. They're making sure that the door is thrown away and that the invaders continue to have a very good time at your expense. They are working for the invaders. It's going on in this country as we talk. Ladies and gentlemen, this is only the prologue. Après moi le déluge, as the king said before he was decapitated. It is the same with Mubarak. Après moi, le déluge.
Savage. Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
headlines in the world today. Al Gore says that the snowstorms throughout America are caused by the global warming situation. The jihadists in the media are saying that the protests in Egypt that have brought down a moderate Arab government are being brought down by a moderate group of protesters, when in fact it's being caused by the Islamists inside Egypt and in the world. The governor of California is citing the rioting in Egypt as an excuse to continue tax hikes in California. Obama is urging Mubarak not to run again after all. Mubarak said he's not going to run again. On Sunday, Hillary said, "We're not advocating any specific outcome, even though behind the scenes they were holding secret meetings with Muslim Brotherhood members." Over the weekend, our government discussed the fall of Egypt with a group dedicated to Islam's global spread. Muslim Brotherhood says prepare for war with Israel. Israel is shocked by Obama's betrayal of Mubarak. Netanyahu fears an Islamist takeover of Egypt. 2 million people pack a Cairo square. Tehran, Iran, no democracy movement. So that's what's going on in the world. People are asking, is the U.S. government in cahoots with the Egyptian rioters? It seems that they have been. And does Obama have sympathies with radical Muslims, not moderate Muslims? That's the real question. Because remember, Mubarak is a Muslim. And who is Hillary functioning for? Who is she operating on behalf of? Is Egypt the first gale in a world of hurricanes? Do you fear the administration is behind toppling first Egypt and then other moderate Muslim states? Why do you think they're doing it? Do you fear this administration is rudderless and without any coherent foreign policy goals? Who do you think is profiting financially from the chaos in the Middle East? What did you think of Mubarak's speech? And what did you think of the media's reaction to Mubarak's speech? The biggest loser today, Neil Cavuto on Fox News, who thought that being flippant was appropriate for an issue as serious as this. Will Jordan, America's next ally, be the next nation to fall? These are some of the questions that we're asking on the Savage Nation. Now, if you think that's bad enough, you're right, but there's much more coming. Oh, yeah, there's much more coming. So-called U.S. security officials briefed Wall Street leaders about a potential threat after a recent publication of a magazine by Islamists that is advocating jihadists in America to target banks, other institutional wealth centers, and wealthy Americans, arguing that it is perfectly Islamic to steal money from infidels. Did you hear what I just said? The cover story written by Anwar al-Awlaki, an American who was called a moderate Muslim preacher while he lived here, is entitled "The Ruling on Dispossessing the Disbeliever's Wealth in Dar al-Harb." What does that mean? It justifies taking the wealth of non-Muslim Westerners. It celebrates taking wealth as better than earning it. What's more, it says that when a jihadist steals money from non-Muslim Westerners, don't worry about it. It's very, very good Muslim behavior. And, of course, the wealth of private citizens is also up for fair game, even those who have supported them in New York City and elsewhere. It's also come out that al-Baradei is a stooge for Iran, in plain English. Donald Trump says the Chinese are looking to strip us of everything. Couldn't agree with him more. Egypt's conflicting views of democracy and religion. Fear the Muslim Brotherhood. Oil tops $100 on Egypt unrest. All of these and other stories can be found in one place for you. I've collected them all on michaelsavage.com. But before we leave the news, views, and reviews, and I'm not doing much reviews. I'm giving you the news, and I'm giving you my views. I'm not doing many reviews. Go to michaelsavage.com and see an article on the top left by Frank Gaffney, "The Muslim Brotherhood is the Enemy." Phenomenal. Take a look at the nice fellow in the mask. On the right, "Muslim Brotherhood, prepare Egyptians for war with Israel." Interesting how the Muslim Brotherhood wears hoods with eye cutouts, and how the radical left media, who is so terrified of the Ku Klux Klan, has nothing to say when the Muslim Klux Klan appears on the world's headlines.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Judicial death panel for Obamacare. No kidding, Nancy. What are you going to do now? If you go all the way to the bottom of the Savage website, michaelsavage.com, the most important story is the picture of the primates in the wild with their babies. We mustn't forget our animal friends, and we must protect them. Chelsea Clinton, remember her? Remember Chelsea Clinton got married last summer? Well, her husband, Mark Mezvinsky, the Stanford grad turned investment banker, he didn't exactly leave her, but he's been gone for a few months to hone his skiing techniques out west. Chelsea's husband flakes out, heads for the hills. In other words, he became a ski bum. But then again, if you take a look at the wedding picture, can you blame him? Detroit Free Press reports Sikh students can wear a dagger in public schools. In other words, two legs good, four legs bad. Not all animals are equal. Not all animals are equal. In other words, if your son brought a ballpoint pen with a picture of a gun on it, he'd be arrested. But Sikhs are allowed to bring a dagger because it's part of their religion. Maybe it's time the crackers in America said that the Second Amendment is part of their religion and their son is going to bring a gun to school. How about killing 100 sled dogs that are perfectly healthy, shooting off half their brain while they were running away, slashing their throats? Did it happen? Yes. You want to read about it? It's on michaelsavage.com. What else do we have for you on the website? Immigration officer fired after putting wife on terrorist list. That's my old friend Jackie Smith who banned me from England. Immigration officer fired after putting wife on terrorist list. That's the same liberal vermin who put me on the list of banned individuals in England where I'm still stuck. 1-800-449-8255. Chicago care leader among protesters in Egypt. Shocking. Just shocking. Synagogue torched in Tunisia. Really? Shocking. Synagogue torched in Tunisia. That can't be happening. These are just legitimate aspirations of the youth, according to the liberals in America. U.S. will be the biggest Spanish-speaking country by 2050. That's because they've all come here to work so hard. Well, those are some of the stories that you're going to look at on michaelsavage.com. More to come right here on the Savage Nation. Stay tuned.
Savage.
Hillary Clinton has emerged as a person of no means whatsoever. She has no chances of any national leadership because she will be part and parcel of the Obama regime who lost Egypt. And there's no question that all of it goes to Obama himself, the weak leftist president, whose vacuum, the vacuum of the leadership that should be here from America, is encouraging none other than Iran and the Muslim Brotherhood. Make no mistake that the Iranian government is waiting for Egypt to fall into its hands. The Muslim Brotherhood happens to be dominated by Iranian Islamic fundamentalists. They will emerge as the winner. And if you listen to the fools in the media, they say first it was protesters. No, first it was students. Twitterers with dungarees simply wanting a better life. They wanted the right to Twitter each other. And then it became protesters. Then when they saw Egypt burning and the museums being sacked, they saw citizens having to protect themselves. Suddenly, even the vermin in the media said, well, we better change our language a little bit. They're not students, or what can we call them now? Well, they have legitimate grievances, I guess. This is very serious business. The Obama administration is clearly not doing what it needs to do to prevent an Islamic takeover. They're guilty of the same mistake that led Carter to fail to support the Shah. They're opening the door to the takeover of Egypt the way Carter did to the takeover of Iran. And so you say, well, but the Nobel laureate Dr. Mohammed El-Baradei has great popular support there. Who is he? In plain English, he's a front man for the Islamic regime in Iran, to make it simple. Say, well, no, that's not true, Savage. He's a Nobel laureate. You're not. Well, Al Gore's a Nobel laureate. Also, Arafat was a Nobel laureate. Yeah, Yasser Arafat was a Nobel laureate. What'd that make him? What'd that make him, less of a murderer? He shielded Iran's nuclear weapons program from the Security Council for years, Al-Baradei. He lobbied against UN Security Council sanctions against Iran. So Al-Baradei is a front man for Iran. That's what's going on here. If we let the two most populous nations in the region fall to the Muslim extremists, one because of Jimmy Carter and the other through Carter Jr., Barack Obama. Who are you going to blame? Who are you going to blame for this? Who will you blame for this? The fact of the matter is, throughout the world, leaders in Asia, Africa, and South America are looking at what's going on between Washington and Egypt, and they are getting the message. Obama's word is meaningless and worthless. America will not back its allies. America will shoot you in the back at the first sign of trouble. Who is fueling the mob raging in the streets of Egypt? How is this possible that the U.S. goes on the side of the rioters? Obama will go down in history as the president who lost Egypt, says Aluf Ben in Haaretz. The street revolts in Tunisia and Egypt show that the United States can do very little to save its friends from the wrath of their citizens. Well, that's one way to look at it. I almost had the feeling that our weak leftist president was almost behind the rioters. It seemed for a while as though he was pleased with what was going on. As Egypt burns, Obama partied. Did you read that story in your local paper? I don't think so. As Egypt burned, Nero fiddled, and Obama partied. Islamic radicals, they escaped from prison. The Muslim Brotherhood joined al-Baradi on the street. Socialists continued to mobilize protests in Cairo. And where was Barack Obama, the leader of the free world? Watching basketball and partying on Saturday. On Saturday, Barack Hussein Obama spent the morning watching his daughter play basketball while Egypt burned. Then on Saturday night, while the museums were being broken into, Obama went out and partied with David Axelrod. As 30 years of United States Middle East strategy teeters on collapse, Obama spent Saturday night at a going-away party for David Axelrod, who is leaving the administration to set up Obama's reelection campaign in Chicago. Obama will go down in history as the president who lost Egypt. Unto itself, you say, that's not so worrisome. Well, unto itself, it is very worrisome, because this will spread. As I said to you on Friday here on the Savage Nation radio program, if the radicals take over Egypt with a little help from Hillary Clinton, the American media, and Obama, and then they topple the governments of Yemen, let's just say Yemen, they will control both ends of the Suez Canal. Has anyone put that together yet? Price of oil, anyone? If they should topple our friend King Hussein of Jordan, what do you think is going to happen then? Do you want another Middle East war? All you Twitterers, do you have any idea what's going on? And what's most disturbing to me is when the pro-democracy movement tried to rise up in Iran about 2 years ago. It tried. There were protests in the streets of Iran. Where was Jerry Rivers then? Old mustache wax Rivers was nowhere to be seen, cheering them on, calling them people with legitimate grievances. Where was Hillary Clinton then? Why did she have nothing good to say about the protesters in Iran 2 years ago, the pro-democracy protesters? Why is the damn left-wing media in America so excited about the radical protests going on in Egypt, which we know will usher in a new dark age in Egypt, when they had nothing to say when the people were trying to throw off the shackle of the mullahs and of the Hitler of our time, Ahmadinejad? We are living through the worst of times, with the worst leadership in American history, if you want to even call it that. If you'd like to talk about the collusion between the government and the media, whether it be the mustachioed Jerry Corona on Fox News, who was calling for the Muslim Brotherhood to be included in the government. No word from... Now, remember, the Muslim Brotherhood is Al-Qaeda. They are Hamas. You'd think that the News Corporation would say something to Jerry Rivers, but apparently not. No one says anything to anybody. The only crime in America is to be a patriot or to be too much of an American. You have a thing like Charlie Sheen with girls and cocaine, the shame of it all, and CBS doesn't cancel his series. The only series CBS will not run, the only talkers CBS will not touch are conservatives. A degenerate drug addict, fine. Real family entertainment from Les Moonves. Chicago, Rich, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Michael, it's a pleasure to talk to you, sir. You know what? I've seen this since this Yahoo we call a president has come here years ago, settled in, quite much like Hillary Rodham Clinton did in New York, which is a tragedy. Well, I won't say where I work, but let's just say I work closely to where he's going to be stationed when he goes for re-election. I've seen nothing but deceit from this guy. I've seen it all the way on down as far as Rod Blagojevich and the rest of Illinoisans. I am ashamed. I've had enough. I don't know what to do anymore. You know,
Well, he's a carpetbagger. We know Obama's a carpetbagger like Hillary Clinton was in New York. We know this is all about gerrymandering districts, et cetera, and hoodwinking the people, controlling elections. But now we have a weak leftist president destabilizing not only the Middle East, but potentially the entire world. But we also see clearly everything I've been saying on this show for years, which is a collusion between the government media, which is a government media complex. There's not a rational person who cannot see what this government media complex is doing to the world right now. Not one person cannot see what's going on if they truly open their eyes to what's going on. Why did they not have such sympathy for the Iranian protesters who were trying to overthrow the mullahs and Ahmadinejad, the Hitler of our time? Where were they at that time? Where was Mustachio from Fox News at that time? Why was there no excitement about the protesters in Iran at that time? Where is the sympathy for the Coptic Christians of Egypt who have been subject to suicide bombings by radical Islamists in Egypt? Why was there no outcry from the people who are saying they want human rights all of a sudden in Egypt? Why did they say nothing about human rights when a nail bomb went off outside a Coptic Christian church on New Year's evening? Why did they say nothing about that? Listen, we have a lot of trouble in this country. There's no question Obama and Hillary Clinton lost Egypt. And there's no question the Democrat Party is finished.
Savage.
You know, the left wing in this country is denying the Muslim Brotherhood's radical ties and actions in the past. But joining us now with an exclusive report on this relationship is Eric Stackelback.
Well, Michael, it's always a pleasure to be here. And, you know, last time we spoke, just last week, we talked about Egypt and the situation there. Now, when we spoke last week, Michael, the unrest in Egypt was just starting. We knew that the government in Tunisia had been toppled and that the unrest had spread to Egypt, to Jordan, and to Yemen. Egypt was the one we were keeping our eye on then, and now that's really panned out the way we thought it would. It's a complete mess there now. It's a chaotic situation, an anarchic situation, quite frankly, Michael. So where do we stand? The big winner to come out of this situation, possibly, the fear I have and a lot of other people I speak to here in Washington have and in Israel have, is that the Muslim Brotherhood, a group you and I, Michael, have discussed so many times on this program, more the American Muslim Brotherhood front groups, but the Muslim Brotherhood is based in Egypt, was founded in Egypt, and a lot of experts right now, credible experts, believe that the Brotherhood may come out of this chaos in Egypt on top. Right now we have a situation where the protests in Egypt are pretty unorganized, at least on the surface. A lot of average Egyptians, middle-class Egyptians, out there on the street screaming for change, screaming for democracy, and freedoms.
Oh, right.
So this wasn't a protest movement that was started by the Brotherhood, at least on the surface. But let's keep two things in mind, Michael. Number one, the Muslim Brotherhood is the most organized and efficient opposition movement in Egypt, bar none. They're huge. Number two, the 1979 Iranian Revolution began much the same way. It was average Iranians, vendors, shopkeepers, middle-class people, working-class people, taking to the streets in Tehran to protest the Shah. Now, what happened? About 5 or 6 months into the Iranian Revolution, it was co-opted by the Ayatollah Khomeini and his jihadi Islamist, and the rest is jihadi history, as we know 31 years later. My fear is that the Muslim Brotherhood will do the same thing in Egypt, take advantage of the instability in Egypt to seize power. Like I said, right now this protest movement is leaderless. There's no clear voice, and that's perfect for an Islamist group like the Muslim Brotherhood, which is well organized, which has a message, has a clear blueprint. They've been planning for this for years. So a leaderless situation is perfect for them to step into the void and supply guidance and stability.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a situation right now where Muhammad al-Baradei, who's the former IAEA, International Atomic Agency nuclear watchdog. He formerly headed up the IAEA at the UN. This is a guy who's not a friend of America. He's overtly anti-Israel. We have a situation right now where he's apparently emerged as the leading opposition voice, at least in public. The Muslim Brotherhood is deliberately keeping a low profile. Now, Al-Baradei and the Brotherhood have a nice little relationship. They've both praised each other publicly over the past several months and over the past few days. Al-Baradei has pledged to work with the Muslim Brotherhood, and the Muslim Brotherhood has pledged to work with Al-Baradei in a new coalition government post-Hosni Mubarak.
Well, basically a radical puppet or stooge.
Al-Baradei, Michael, in essence, is a Muslim Brotherhood stooge, whether he knows it or not. The Brotherhood will use him for the first few months, maybe the first year, as a secular figurehead. Then once they feel strong enough and they're well-organized enough, they'll elbow him right out of the way and overtly, publicly assume power in Egypt. And they have a goal to turn Egypt into an Islamic state. Iran, 1979, the Ayatollah Khomeini did the same thing. When he took power, he appointed a secular liberal prime minister. Well, after a year, he was chased out of the country and had to flee to Paris. The veneer was dropped. The whole mask was dropped after about a year. And if we had a situation where the Muslim Brotherhood and the secular Al-Baradei were sharing power, it would only be a matter of time before the mask was dropped and the Muslim Brotherhood would seize Egypt by the throat.
True.
Here's the deal. The Muslim Brotherhood was founded in 1928 in Egypt. Now, since then, they've been banned in Egypt officially. They're an underground, secretive movement, but they're very strong and very well organized. What their goals are to spread Islamic Sharia law worldwide and to unite all Muslim countries into one Islamic super state. And any non-Muslim countries also have to be subverted to Allah and Islamic law in the long term. So that's the first thing you need to know about this group, the Muslim Brotherhood. Secondly, their motto. This is their motto, their official motto that was founded in 1928 and has never changed. Allah is our objective. The Prophet is our leader. Quran is our law. Jihad is our way. Dying in the way of Allah is our highest hope. Now, with a motto like that, Michael, it's no surprise that several leading Islamic terrorists got their starts in the Muslim Brotherhood.
Well, who is that you're talking about?
I'll give you three examples. Osama bin Laden, his top deputy, Ayman al-Zawahiri, and the 9/11 mastermind, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, all al-Qaeda, all got their starts as young men, as members of the Muslim Brotherhood. Another guy you and I have been discussing a lot lately, Michael, Anwar al-Awlaki. Now, he's the American-born al-Qaeda cleric. He's based in Yemen right now, targeting the United States. He's a big admirer of the Muslim Brotherhood and has written very fondly and spoken very fondly of various Muslim Brotherhood ideologues and founders. So the Muslim Brotherhood was a direct influence on al-Qaeda. This is undisputed. And Hamas, the notorious terror group, which is right now ruling Gaza, which is right over the border from Egypt, by the way, Hamas calls itself, quote, the Palestinian branch of the Muslim Brotherhood. So we have a situation where this group, Hamas is the Muslim Brotherhood. Al-Qaeda cites the Muslim Brotherhood as inspiration for their movement.
Hmm.
So we have a situation where a group which wants Islamic Sharia law worldwide, which wants to subvert the world to Islam, which has connections to terror leaders from Al-Qaeda, and it is Hamas, it's interchangeable with Hamas. We have a situation right now where this group, it's quite possible that this group could take control of the largest Arab nation and the most influential nation in the Middle East.
This is unbelievable to me.
To say this is scary is an understatement. Here's what would happen, Michael. Immediately, if the Muslim Brotherhood were to, you know, jockeying for position, were to come to power in Egypt. Number one, the peace treaty with Israel out the window. A 32-year-old peace treaty with Israel, between Egypt and Israel, struck under Sadat, Sadat, by the way, who Muslim Brotherhood jihadists assassinated in 1981.
Mm-hmm.
That peace treaty will be out the window. The Middle East will quite literally explode. It's on the verge of doing it anyway, even without an Islamist Egypt. Egypt, right away, Michael, will move, in my view, will move into that Iran, Syria, Hamas, Hezbollah orbit, that axis. And they will unite with the Iranians and with the Iranian proxies to, in their view, wipe Israel off the map, without a doubt. Number two, the U.S. supplies Egypt with $1.3 billion of military aid per year. Not only will the Brotherhood possibly even cut ties with the U.S., any kind of official ties with the U.S., they'll keep that military hardware, and they will use it. U.S. military hardware will be used against Israel and God knows who else.
Oh, my God.
So that's the second thing to keep in mind. The third thing to keep in mind is, will Egypt, under the Muslim Brotherhood, become a training ground for Islamic jihadists? Will the Brotherhood work closely with al-Qaeda in plotting against the West? Why not? As I said, bin Laden, Zawahiri, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed all got their start in the Brotherhood. They share the same goals. They differ in tactics. And al-Qaeda and the Brotherhood have butted heads a bit in the past few years. Al-Qaeda says, look, the Brotherhood's getting involved in the political process. It's a waste of time. They need to just wage jihad. But the Brotherhood says, look, al-Qaeda's too impatient. So they have different strategies on getting there, but at the end of the day, they have the same goals, which are subverting the world violently, if need be, to Islam. So I see no reason why an Egypt led by the Muslim Brotherhood would not give al-Qaeda a welcome mat.
Well, of course.
So this is a situation you have if the Brotherhood takes over Egypt. It's a nightmare scenario in so many ways. And you know, Michael, I've heard over the past few days on CNN, on MSNBC, even some people on Fox News, some of these mainstream inside the Beltway pundits and analysts and bureaucrats saying that the United States can work with the Muslim Brotherhood. They've moderated. We can work with them in Egypt. They're not violent anymore.
Wait. Hold on a minute. That's crazy.
Number one, the first thing to keep in mind there is the Muslim Brotherhood is a very seditious organization. Seditious, secretive. As I said, they have a long-term goal of getting ingratiating themselves into the halls of power, into Congress. Here in the U.S., into Congress, the White House, FBI, DOJ, the military. They're plants. Well, they're doing the same thing in Egypt. They're planting themselves in the halls of power in Egypt. They're very patient. Jihad is not a right-now thing for them. Jihad will not be waged. Violent military jihad will not be waged by the Brotherhood until they feel like they're strong enough. They're very patient. They don't feel like they're strong enough yet. They'll stay nonviolent. Once they gain strength, they'll go violent. So these foolish pundits who say America can work with the Muslim Brotherhood are out of their minds, or they're just ignorant of the Muslim Brotherhood's history and ideology. I'll give you two examples of how the Muslim Brotherhood is a direct threat to America, and how, if they gain power in Egypt, America would be even more in their crosshairs. Number one, you and I have discussed this many times, Michael. Back in 2007, the largest terrorism financing trial in American history, a bunch of guys charged for funding the terror group Hamas. They were all members. This is identified in their own documents that federal prosecutors introduced in this trial. Several of America's leading Muslim organizations are literally Muslim Brotherhood fronts.
Right.
That's number one. These are groups that are the Brotherhood, have the ideology of the Brotherhood, but they don't call themselves a Muslim Brotherhood. We're thinking of CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations, ISNA, the Islamic Society of North America, MASS, the Muslim American Society, that whole alphabet soup of Muslim American, quote-unquote, civil rights groups. These are all Muslim Brotherhood-connected fronts. And that's not me just saying that, Michael. Federal prosecutors said that in the largest terror financing trial in American history. So that's the first thing to remember. The second thing to remember, and this was very overlooked, back in September, the global leader of the Muslim Brotherhood, he's based surprise, in Egypt, which is the real hub of the global movement, which, by the way, they have chapters in over 100 countries. He declared war on America in so many words, called for jihad, not an official, literal declaration of war against America, but he called for jihad against America and American interest and said that America's days are numbered. This is a leader of the Muslim Brotherhood, the global leader of the Brotherhood in Egypt. This is what they think of America. And this went unnoticed, unfortunately, by our political classes and apparently by our intelligence services. The Muslim Brotherhood is the enemy. They are the enemy of America. And to suggest that America can coexist with such an entity taking power in the world, in the largest Arab country, Arab Muslim country, is madness.
Exactly.
We can only hope that in Egypt, the military stabilizes things, opens up personal freedoms and eases some of the restrictions. But in doing that, they have to make very sure, in trying to please the public, and rightfully so, people want freedom. The average Egyptian wants freedom, who's not an Islamist. But if you're going to do that, you need to clamp down on the Muslim Brotherhood like you have over the past 50 years in Egypt, because if not, it's a doomsday scenario.
Thanks for the report, Eric.
Michael, thanks. Always a pleasure. And remember, you can check out my show, Stackelbeck on Terror, on CBNNews.com. Thanks a lot.
I'll be right back. It's the Savage Nation.
Savage.
I'm shy of bookstores. I don't go into bookstores for a number of reasons. I haven't for many years, which is a shame. I used to, you know, I mean, a writer should live in bookstores, right? I used to love bookstores, but all right, so I stopped going. But now that I have a raging bestseller, Trickle Up Poverty, I went into to my local Barnes & Noble. I was dressed somewhat like a homeless person, which is my normal garb during the week. I bicycle, you see, and when I bicycle, I like to wear old clothing. I don't wear any kind of jester costumes. I leave that to the fools who wear jester costumes on bicycles and show you their butt as they cut you off and wave a hammer at you to break your mirror. So I wear old clothes, I mean, because they're comfortable if you fall, you know what I mean? There's a little water on the ground. I swear to God, so I have one jacket that's 20 years old that I wear. I like it. It's padded if I fall, you know, the whole. So I go in with the helmet, the glasses, the sweatshirt under the helmet. I look like, you know, the Unabomber. And with sunglasses, and no one, of course, knows me, thank God, because I'm not a TV guy. And I go to the bestseller rack, and there's my book, and it was a pleasure. Over comes the manager. Under the garb, she apparently recognized me, and she says, Michael, it's so nice to see you here. I was shocked that she knew me at all. I mean, I'm a local author, but I never make it. I'm not one of these guys who reads his books and, you know, the postmenopausal crowd and all that, so... She was an African-American lady, the nicest woman you could ever believe running a major league bookstore. And I wouldn't say she was a fan of the show. I didn't even ask her that. She was just a woman knowledgeable about the book business. She said, let me tell you a story. A woman came in last week into this store, and she got in my face, and she yelled at me. And she said, you put that book in that slot where it belonged. And she said it was funny because your listeners are fanatic about this. They won't stop demanding, you know, the right placement in this and that. I thought that was pretty amazing. So anyway, big deal. So I took a picture with a cell phone camera. I had to take a picture finally in front of a book thing. I felt comfortable enough to go to the magazine stand. I don't know how bookstores make money, by the way, because it's filled with deadbeats who sit there all day long reading magazines for free, and then they put them back in the rack all wrinkled up. I feel bad about that. Like, I grew up in a time, I'm even afraid to touch a magazine because it was considered cheating. When I was a kid, if you went into a candy store and you looked at a comic, the guy behind the counter would practically tear your hands off if you read it for free. You remember those days? Who would have the nerve to go into a candy store and look at, let's say, a comic book for nothing? How would you expect a guy to make a living? So it was understood. It was like a social contract. If you went into a store to look at a comic book as a kid, I was trained, my father would say, you buy it. Don't read it for free. That's cheating. So I paid the nickel or the dime. Now you got people in there, mainly liberals with gray beards. They got nothing to do. They're unemployed or probably retired professors. Who knows? and they sit around looking scruffier than I, reading the magazines. So today I went in and I read the magazines. I did buy a few. You know, it's funny. You can tell a man by the magazines he reads. Let me tell you what I bought. I bought Flying Magazine. I bought several boating magazines. I bought Hemmings Motor News. I bought some classic car magazine. Something, you know, like cars and stuff like that. Magazines are a lot of pleasure. They're very relaxing. In addition to being interesting, they're very relaxing. Why Flying Magazine? I don't fly. I've always wanted to be a pilot. I can't fly. I don't have the skill for it. I can boat. I mean, I drive a 40-ton boat without any water, but I can't fly a plane. I'm thinking of taking up flying lessons now at my age. Who knows? Why not? I mean, a lot of people do it. I mean, when you think about it, I'd rather die in a plane crash than die of cancer or a heart attack. Symbol shot. Have you thought about that? I mean, do you really want to sit and wait to go to the assisted living with the teeth falling out and have an illegal immigrant beat you up for your small change when your family leaves you there in the last years of your life as they push you into a corner facing an old curtain and you can't move? It's a horrible way to die. They beat you about the head and neck and, you know, take your money. It's worse than a TSA agent. What happens to the old people in assisted living is worse than what happens in an airport screening today.
Savage.